under attack. Time has come, we're gonna take it back. Just go wait and see. Don't tread on me. I won't sit back, stand idly by. Watch the heart of my nation die. Oh, not me. Don't tread on me. Don't tread on my Bible. Don't tread on my guts. Don't you tread on my faith in God's only Son. Don't tread on me. Don't tread on me. Better leave me alone, cause I wanna be free. And I'll damn still fight for my liberty. I'm telling you, brother, don't tread on me. Come, gonna take a stand. Spread these words all across the land. From sea to sea, don't tread on me. So tell your neighbors, tell all your friends. Gonna see that eagle flying high again. You better believe, don't tread on me. Don't tread on my Bible, don't tread on my guns. Don't you tread on my faith in God's only Son. Don't tread on me. Don't tread on me. Better leave me alone, cause I wanna be free. And I'll damn sure fight for my liberty. I'm telling you, brother, don't tread on me. Yeah, I'm telling you, brother, don't tread on me.
Everybody, welcome back into the show. Second hour on this Friday, March 8th, 2024 edition of Your Defending Fathers with Chuck and Randy Bishop here on the Patriot Voice Radio Network. Joining us as usual as a faithful soldier every Friday, reporting in for duty is Pastor Rusty Chatfield. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
What's on your agenda for today, sir?
I'm going to talk about the call for prayer from Ben Franklin during the Constitutional Convention on June 28, 1787. And did you get my – you must not have got my text.
No, I did not.
I don't know how why that works. That's the problem with texting. Sometimes it says it goes through. Okay, so we're in the Constitutional Convention, and things are in disarray. The big issue at the Constitutional Convention was concerning the legislative branch. How would the Congress be comprised? That was the big issue. The larger states were saying that, and James Madison, the larger states at this time, the largest state by far was Virginia. He was saying that it should be based upon population. That the more people that live in the state, the more votes you would get in a Congress. He did advocate a bicameral House, but both based on
bicameral, meaning a House of Representatives and a Senate.
Right. And but both based on population.
Right.
Okay. Now, the smaller states, so that was called the Virginia Plan. It came from Madison. Now, the smaller states, they wanted something called the New Jersey Plan, in which that representation would be equal amongst larger states and smaller states. During the Articles of Confederation, every state got one vote. And so it was say, no, we are not going to enter into a union where the larger states, because they have more people, can dominate the smaller states. So that was the great impasse that had come.
The problem being that you have representation of the people, because that was the basis that actually triggered the revolution, was taxation without representation, the Boston Tea Party, all of that. When you're saying, wait a minute, okay, people, more people in a certain state should have a larger voice because they're more people. They are dealing with issues and a level of a larger group of people that maybe a smaller group of people aren't experiencing. This has got to be based on population. But they're saying, no, wait a minute, stop. We're a little tiny state. We're never going to be big. I mean, look at how small, you know, Connecticut, New Hampshire, Delaware, whatever you want to say, compared to New York. So they're saying, no, we want to be on an equal basis with you guys. That was basically the dilemma.
That was the argument. And In first of all, in fact, remember, according to the Articles of Confederation, it took 13 of 13 states to amend the Articles.
Unanimous.
So it had to be unanimous. And the original calling, the original intent of the Constitutional Convention was simply to amend the Articles of Confederation. The state of Rhode Island never did send anybody. They never sent a representative to the Constitutional Convention. So a lot of people were arguing this is the whole thing is wrong. The whole thing is beyond the purview of why we came, and it's against, contradicts the Articles of Confederation, which we already had, that was already in force. So that is where we were at here. And so, but the people were there, and most people, especially Washington, Madison, Hamilton, knew we had to do something. We needed a new plan of government.
Absolutely. Perfect. We're going to take a short break, a word from our sponsors. We'll be right back.
If you are a PIE&G electric customer, call and get on the PIE&G Connect Express today. Call 800-423-6634 to get connected to the best, fastest, most reliable fiber internet connection in northern Michigan. Faster than Frontier, speedier than Sunrise, all at an affordable price. So call them today at 800-423-6634 and get on the PIE&G Connect internet train. All aboard!
Free spring inspection for your vehicle. Bring your vehicle to Royal Tire at 402 West Mitchell and Petoskey. Get a free inspection of your wiper blades, tires and wheels, a battery test, brake pads and rotors. Call to schedule an appointment at 231-347-1001. Make sure your vehicle is ready for summer. It's coming. Again, call Royal Tire at 231-347-1001.
Hi, this is Ian Murphy from the Iron Pig Smokehouse in downtown Gaylord. Join me every Tuesday at 10 a.m. with Trucker Randy for an update on all things happening at the Iron Pig. We're open 7 days a week and serving breakfast Saturdays and Sundays. You can order online anytime for takeout, curbside, and delivery at ironpigsmoke.com. And be sure to keep up with our legal battle against the health department by subscribing to our podcast at fuelcasttv.com.
Oliver, I'm running to be your state representative in the 106th District. One of the reasons that I am running is because our current public education system is failing our children. I support real, common sense policies and approaches to education and the safety of our children. All parents have a right to decide on their children's education, not the government or unions. I will fight to ensure that. After all, they are our most precious resources we have, and they are worth the fight. Vote for me, Todd Smallenberg, electsmallenberg.com. Paid for by Todd Smallenberg for state rep.
Gun owners in northern Michigan don't have to go far to get their firearm problem solved. Curtis Gunsmithing handles all gun work, adjustments, bluing, rebarreling, cleaning, and even FFL transfers. Need a stock refinished or some custom work done? How about a trigger job? That's right. Let the gun doctor, Tom Curtis of Curtis Gunsmithing, take care of old Betsy. She'll be in good hands. Call 231-347-3487. That's 347-3487. Curtis Gunsmithing of Petoskey.
Hey, everybody, welcome back into the show. Second segment of our history lesson discussion with Pastor Chatfield. And I have a question, sir. This was the convention where they were looking to ratify the initial draft of the U.S. Constitution. Is that an accurate statement as to where that was, where this is taking place? If you could unmute, we'll be good to go. I think this needs to be the tee up of this so people can understand basically where you're at, where this arguing was going on, and why they were fighting over this issue. Where exactly was that at? Oh, Pastor Chatfield, you need to unmute your mic. We got you muted still. Let's see, and he's having problems unmuting his mic. Okay, let's do this then. You know what? I'm going to terminate the call. Folks, stand by. There he is.
I'm on, Randy. I'm sorry. Had to walk away for a second.
Not a problem. I was wanting clarification as to, was this the convention where they were going to be ratifying the Constitution?
Well, they were writing it here in 1787.
Okay, so this is the drafting part of it. So what was it, a formal meeting, a formal convention,
a draft
committee? What was it?
No, this was the convention where they were all meeting, and they had a big argument about how the Congress would be comprised.
So in the drafting of the actual Constitution, getting to the particular article which defines how the Congress would be structured.
Yes, exactly right.
Got it. Exactly. Okay, right. Now I'm up to speed with you.
Now, so what happens is, and I'm going to get to this in a second, but Franklin rises and gives a speech, or he gives it to a guy sitting next to him and gives a speech, and that's one of the controversies here. Did he actually say this, or did he write it and allowed somebody else to read it? Which really is inconsequential, but like everything, there's always debates on this. I read this rather long 35-page essay on this. Now, okay, what he actually said, which I'm going to read you, is there's no debate what he said. The text of what Ben Franklin said is accepted by all, but there's a big argument now as to when he suggested that they stop, they have prayer, they hire a chaplain, and they make it a practice from now on to always open in prayer. That's the big issue. How much did this actually change things? That's a big issue. Okay. The liberal historians are the ones who are bent saying, look, Christianity didn't really have that much to do with our founding. The name of Jesus, God, is not in the Constitution. We were never a Christian nation. All you guys say, you know, you're just Christian nationalists. You're just rewriting history. They minimize what Franklin said, and they put it in this context. Here's what they will say, and I'll get to this in a minute. They'll say, well, Franklin did make the speech, but it really didn't change much. And Alexander Hamilton stood up and says, no, we can't do it. We can't afford a chaplain. And there wasn't a lot of support for it. It was tabled, and it wasn't until 20 years after that the story got out that this was a big deal, and this changed the course of history. Now, the people like myself who've read other things say, well, no, that isn't true. I mean, you know, there's a statement by Jonathan Dayton, who is a member of the Constitutional Convention, and said the doctor sat down. I'm quoting this from memory. He says, the doctor sat down. Never did I behold the countenance of Mr. Washington a more pleased attitude. And he said that there was kind of a – and so was moved that they dismiss and they call for prayer, and it was seconded. They went out. They had prayer. They had church services. And then he writes, Jonathan Dayton writes, when we came back, the opinions of everybody had changed in just a couple of days. That all ill feelings were gone, and this was the beginning of working to come to what became known as the Connecticut Compromise, where we would have two houses, you know, the Senate, based upon just if your state, you get two senators, small state, large state, irregardless of your population, and then the House of Representatives, in which representation is based upon populations. So the small states got what they wanted, the large states got what they wanted, and this was the beginning of a big deal. Okay. So
I want to stop you right there on that point to make sure the listeners understand what he just said. This was a compromise that they gave us the House of Representatives, a bicameral two chambers, House and Senate. The House would be based on population representation. That's why they call them the representatives. And then the senators were equal for every state, where they'd have two senators elected by their state bodies. Their state legislatures would elect those people to look out for the best interests of the states.
Exactly right. Now, Franklin doesn't suggest that. He just says, hey, let's stop and pray. And that's another issue. Okay. Now, generally spoken, we would say that Ben Franklin was a deist in the sense that was Ben Franklin.
What does that mean?
Okay, a deist. There's another question. What does that mean? Here's what I was taught it meant, that God created the universe and stepped back, and he created it with certain principles that would work, certain things, stepped back and watch it, and does not intervene in the affairs of mankind. That, in other words, that prayer does not work, because God is just the creator, and he has made the universe according to certain principles, but he doesn't intervene supernaturally. That's a deist.
However, okay, so just here it is, guys. Have at it. Good luck. God bless. I did my job. Now it's up to you.
Correct.
Would that be? Would that be?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Now
that's what a deist is.
But okay. Well, hang on here. But some people, oh, no. A deist. Some deists believed in prayer, and then God did intervene, and that was Ben Franklin. Now Ben Franklin, I've read his statement on religion. He doubted the divinity of Christ. That means he wasn't sure that Jesus was God. And I have to say that he did say that. Near the end of his life, he repeated it. However, he never denied Christianity, and Ben Franklin was known to go and visit all sorts of different churches. Franklin, like Jefferson, if they would lean more toward free will and Baptist thinking, and that's a long argument. But what I mean by that is Baptists back in those days were the most open group. They did not want a state church. It was men like John Leland from Virginia that convinced Jefferson and Madison, don't have any sort of state church. We'll never support the United States, this Constitution, with any sort of a federal church. We don't want that.
Okay, point of order. Then why did the Danbury Baptists send that letter to President Thomas Jefferson January 1st, 1802, his response where he wrote the separation of church and state? What caused the Danbury Baptists to pursue the president? And I thought was taught in school, it was because they were asking for him to make either Baptist or whatever other Christian religion to be the state, the country's church of for the state. Was that not an accurate request of the president when he responded?
What was
the purpose of that letter from the Danbury Baptist?
More of as a commendation, because the Baptists supported in 1800, in the election of 1800, the Baptists were big supporters of Jefferson.
They helped get him elected.
Yes, they did, because they did not want. Okay, listeners, when I say state church, I'm talking about
government.
Here I'm talking about federal church.
Oh, gotcha.
The state, there were many states that had state churches. Okay, at this time, Massachusetts still had a state church.
Taxes at the state level.
At the state level. But they did not want a federal church, by the way. And Jefferson, in that letter also, he said, look, the federal government, instead of using the word federal, let me use the word national. The national government is not going to have a national church. We leave that up to the denominations and to the states. Jefferson was not saying that if Massachusetts, you want a state church, you can have it. But we here in Virginia, we did away with that, I think it was 1785, and we don't want a state church. So, but he wasn't saying states could not have their own state church like Massachusetts. And again, let me just reemphasize this. The First Amendment, Congress shall make no law respecting establishment of religion. That was only to Congress. It had nothing to do with the states. Remember we talked about the Incorporation Clause and
yes,
and how the 14th Amendment and then the Everson case in 1947, how that's all been flipped now, that all the Bill of Rights now applies to states as well as the federal government. That was never their intent, never their intent. And we've already covered that. But the Danbury Baptists were supporters of Jefferson, and they appreciated it. And Jefferson's letter back was really nothing new. And all he was saying is, between the national government and the states, there's a wall of separation, basically designed in that letter, designed to protect to protect the church from the government, not other way around.
Right.
Not that we couldn't pray. I mean, who held church services in the Capitol during his presidency? Thomas Jefferson did.
Yes, you know, he did.
So come on. Okay, so Jefferson and Franklin were deistic, at least. But and here's what some people are saying about what I'm going to read here when I get to it, probably in the next
segment.
They're saying, well, Franklin didn't believe any of this. He was calling for prayer and all this, that, and the other, because he understood the power of religion. And he understood that tempers were really being frayed, and that we needed something, or the convention would fall apart altogether. He didn't really believe what he was saying. He just said it because he knew some of his listeners believed it, and we needed to come up with some sort of compromise to get the thing done.
Okay, stop. So basically, they're saying that he was placating or appealing to their obvious religious beliefs and saying, okay, let's use this as a tactic to get these guys to calm down and to go back to their religious roots if they believe it. And it was all a manipulation, a ploy on Benjamin Franklin's part.
Yes, in effect, that's what they're saying, something very, very close to what you just said.
Hogwash.
No, yeah, exactly. I say he believed what he said. I think
you bet he's because I've read the speech and I know where you're going in the next segment. But here's my argument, and you know, so many times I am so sick already in this presidential election year, Fox News and all these other democracy 2024. And, you know, we're going to save the democracy. And Biden, you know, said it last night. You know, the insurrection that took place was a direct attack on our democracy. We are not a democracy. And I'm so sick and tired of hearing and people buying into this garbage. They don't understand we're a constitutional republic. They don't get it. And when it's the same kind of, if you keep telling a lie long enough, people will start believing it. That's what I'm concerned about. And these people trying to counter what Ben Franklin said, you're going to read it in the next segment, it's a total load of garbage.
Yes, agreed. And let me just say this before the break here. There's always takes on different things. I mean, one person argues that, well, what Jonathan Dayton said, he said because he was kind of an ally of Aaron Burr, and he didn't like Hamilton, and they were just trying to disparage Hamilton, who did say, hey, we don't have money for a chaplain right now, as if Hamilton was all opposed to this and so on and so forth. I mean, and there's a back and forth. This article I read, so they say, you religious Christians, you believe in the myth of this, that this was some great thing, where it was just a minor footnote of history, and it was Franklin just trying to say something so that the convention wouldn't fall apart.
Robert, listening to us in Roger City, just sent me a picture of a photograph he has framed where the pastor, minister, deacon, whoever it was, called in. Many of the founding fathers literally on their knees, clasping their hands together in prayer with him. We're going to talk about that photograph. And what did Ben Franklin actually say? That's what we're talking about in this history lesson. He's Pastor Sheffield. I'm Chuck Arandy. We're your defending fathers. We'll be right back. Michigan.